forget that it's the farmer feeds them all. The farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, lives on credit until fall. With the interest rate so high, it's a wonder he don't die, and the merchant is the one who takes it all. Forget that it's the farmer feeds them all. If he'd only take a rest, he could put them to the test, 'cause the farmer is the man who feeds them all. The farmer is the man, the farmer is the man, buys on credit until fall. His condition, it's a sin,
Hello friends, and welcome to a special edition of CKVI's Educational Radio Documentaries. You're listening to 91.9 The Cave. I'm your host Liam, and for the next hour I will be discussing some of the issues related to the food and agricultural systems in Canada. So the idea for this show started, a year ago. I had the amazing opportunity of getting a job on a local organic farm. So since then, through immersion in, I guess, active, mindful communities, as well as doing the work itself, I've gotten to learn an incredible amount about the problems in our food system, from both a producer and a consumer's perspective, but most of all, I've realized more and more how pervasively consumers are disengaged from their food sources, how people don't consider where, by whom, or how their food is produced or prepared. So over the past 50 years, our food supply has shifted from a system dominated by small-scale, local, and community-oriented producers to one dominated by multinational corporations with huge distribution nets and massive profit margins. And the only reason these business models are possible or profitable is because they cut corners at almost every stage of production. Wendell Berry, an American writer, he was also an environmental activist and a farmer. A quote I really love from him is, he said that eating is an agricultural act, which I really agree with. I think many would take it even a step further to say that eating is a political act. The choices that we make as consumers is the single most important force deciding which direction our food system is moving. And this goes for all consumerism, like outside of the food system. When you are voting with your money, when you buy a product, you are voting to uphold the systems that are being used to produce that product. So the aim of this documentary is to get people to be thoughtful about it, because the main point is that the information isn't out there. People aren't aware of why the system is unsustainable, why the current system needs to change. So yeah, that's really the point of this documentary. I had an awesome opportunity. I interviewed Ella Fenton, a local organic farmer, so I will be playing some of those clips to come. But just right now, I will play another great old protest song for you by Pete Seeger. The song is called We Shall Overcome. Keep it locked at 91.9 The Cave.
We shall overcome. We shall.
I do.
Hello, welcome back, friends. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9 FM, and this is our educational radio documentary hour. I'm your host, Liam, and today I'm discussing some of the issues in the Canadian food and agricultural system. So I talked a bit earlier about how over the past 50 years, our food supply has shifted from a system dominated by small-scale local producers to one dominated by multinational corporations with huge distribution nets. And I interviewed a local organic farmer, Ayla Fenton, and we discussed some of the reasons that this current industrial model is unsustainable and why it has negative effects on... We broke it down into basically three main groups because we only have an hour to discuss them. So the main groups we chose to talk about were the human health concerns, the social justice aspects or the societal concerns, and then the environmental concerns. So here I asked her just a little bit first to explain about herself and her history in farming, and then about a bit about how ecological practices like the ones used on her farm differ from those in industrial agriculture. So this is Ayla Fenton. Hello friends, I am here with a local organic farmer, Ayla Fenton, to discuss some of the issues I was talking about just a little bit earlier. So hello Ayla, welcome.
Hi Liam.
So why don't you give us a little bit of background about yourself, about how you got into farming and all of that.
Yeah, sure, I'd be happy to. So I guess the first spark that got me interested in agriculture was during my time at Queen's. I was studying biology in my undergrad, and my studies were really focused on ecology and conservation biology. And so that's how I first started learning about some of the environmental problems with our current agricultural system. And then I went on to take a few courses at Ryerson University part-time after I graduated in food security. And so that was interesting because my undergraduate was very focused on kind of learning about the environmental and the more scientific aspects of the issues, whereas the food security courses really opened my eyes to this whole other side of things, which is the social justice part of things.
Yeah, definitely.
And how unjust the current food system is for the vast majority of people in the world. So I've been interested in the issues for quite some time, and then it was really just 2 years ago that I started to realize that I really wasn't well suited to having a desk job in the city, and that I really enjoyed being outdoors and being active and, you know, interacting with nature. So it all just came together to be a really natural fit for me to decide to get into farming.
Mm-hmm.
So last spring, I started an internship on a local organic vegetable farm, which was really great. I learned so much. And this year, I liked it so much that this year I'm returning as the manager of the farm. I've also, through my time farming, I've been getting involved with the National Farmers Union, who does a lot of political advocacy work for farmers, and also La Via Campesina, which is translated, that means the peasant's way, and it's basically the international social movement pushing for agrarian reform and anti-corporate control of agriculture and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really awesome. It's definitely nice to have experiences like that to shove you into agriculture. I mean, seeing it from both sides and learning about it like that. But for people that don't know, there's a topic that has a lot of ambiguity around it, but can you kind of briefly define for us what the difference is between ecological practices, such as the ones like what you would be using on your farm, and how they would differ from industrial agriculture or conventional agriculture?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to just start off by saying that I very much dislike the term conventional agriculture, which is usually what is used to describe what I like to call industrial agriculture.
Yeah.
The term conventional makes it sound like it's a normal thing, when in fact it's extremely abnormal.
Quite abstract and recent, definitely.
Very recent and very unnatural and against the kind of natural ecosystems that
requirements and
So industrial agriculture is generally defined as food production that is dependent on high levels of inputs, and generally those inputs are synthetic. So not only is it high levels of water used very inefficiently, but it's the use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides, which are extremely damaging to our environment.
And synthetic feed and all of that, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And genetically modified organisms, stuff which we'll get into a bit later, I think. But the other principle of industrial agriculture is that it entails extracting the maximum possible output from the land in the shortest amount of time. So it's really about maximizing yields in the short term rather than building up the health of the ecosystems and protecting the sustainability of the systems that are producing the food in
the general long-term prosperity of the land.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
Awesome. The structure of the current food system, obviously, it definitely distances consumers from producers, that in a way that gives consumers very little, or at least not very expansive knowledge of how their food is produced or where it's coming from. And therefore, the average consumer has very little ability to induce any sort of change. So, well, first of all, I guess it would be good to talk a bit about how this current food system started to emerge and when it started to emerge and when it started to shift more from what used to be conventional practices to what is now conventional practices.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that you touch on the point of consumers being distanced from production, and I think a lot of that has to do with just the general structure of our capitalist society.
Yeah, definitely.
Is that nowadays we use money as a tool to purchase goods that we need, instead of either producing them ourselves or acquiring them from somebody that we know.
Yeah.
And so this distance means that people have very little knowledge of how their food is produced, or any other good for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about
definitely
clothes produced in sweatshops in terrible conditions.
Exactly.
It's the same principle. People have very little concept of how the food is produced, and therefore they have very little agency to induce change.
Yeah.
So this system has really been evolving the same way that the whole corporate capitalist system has been evolving over the past 100 years or so. But I'll touch on a few specific historical things that I think have led to the way that the system is today.
Yeah, that would be great.
So I really think that our modern food system has its roots in the era of the Great Depression, in North America at least, because that's when the first farm subsidy programs were designed. So subsidies, for those of you who don't know, are basically just government payments to support various industries. So basically what they did in the U.S. and Canada back in the 30s, during the Great Depression, in Canada at that point, about 70% of the population were farmers. So that's the majority of the people in Canada.
Definitely.
And so basically, as an economic stimulus plan, the government decided to start subsidizing major crops grown by Canadian farmers. And this meant that the government introduced programs that would guarantee minimum prices to farmers for crops like wheat and corn.
Yeah.
And the government would pay those prices to the farmers, whether they had a good crop or not. And so it basically encouraged farmers to specialize in growing exclusively those crops.
Singular cash crops, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And it encouraged the development of monoculture farming.
Yeah.
Monoculture meaning that you're growing one single crop on a massive amount of land, as opposed to the more traditional forms of agriculture known as, we can use the term polyculture, where many different crops are grown together, and you have different crops that form symbioses with each other to provide each other with nutrients and stuff,
exactly.
and have more of a self-sustaining system.
Yeah.
So monocultures in general are always going to be more dependent on high inputs.
Yeah.
So are more industrial.
Yeah, exactly.
Then basically what happens is that because we're producing so much wheat and so much corn, our markets became more export oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So farmers started producing to try to sell abroad. And so right now, Canada's food production system is one of the most export-oriented in the entire world. Over the past two decades, our government has quadrupled food exports, so that now almost 45% of the food that's produced in Canada is exported.
Yep.
And the majority of it is purchased by multinational corporations who use that corn and wheat to create what they call value-added products. And value-added basically means that there's a higher profit margin.
Yeah, of course.
So the way that they achieve this higher profit margin is by taking a whole food, and the best example is corn,
mm-hmm.
because processed corn products are literally in
everything.
So they take the corn, which is a whole food, and they break it down and process it into basically individual products like high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And then they combine those various products to create foods, in quotation marks, foods, like Twinkies or Doritos or whatever, any processed food, basically. And then they earn a huge margin on that. And that obviously has implications for human health.
Yes,
of course. The fact that the majority of our food is that type of food. But it also has impacts on smaller scale farmers who are trying to produce healthy food for local markets,
mm-hmm.
because it makes it very difficult for those farmers to compete against these cheap processed corn and meat products on the grocery store shelves.
Hello friends, welcome back. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9 The Cave's Educational Documentary Hours. Today, I am your host Liam, discussing some of the issues in the Canadian food and agricultural systems. Just in case you're just tuning in, I am interviewing a local organic farmer, Ayla Fenton. We were just talking a little bit about what the most prevalent issues that the current system of agriculture and distribution and just the current industrial system, what threats it poses. So the three main categories we're concentrating on are the environmental, societal, and health issues. So we talked a bit about environmental issues, and we're going to talk a bit about health issues now. So keep it tuned to 91.9.
There's also... I won't get too much into this because I want to kind of focus on the situation in Canada.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of ethical considerations with the way that our food system has developed.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we have made a lot of developing or poorer countries dependent on our extremely cheap food exports.
Exactly.
And artificially cheap because our government is subsidizing it. And so those countries become dependent on our cheap food imports to the point that it wipes out their local producers.
Yeah, exactly.
A really good example of this is in Mexico. Mexico used to be there, like the Mexican traditional diet is very much based on corn,
mm-hmm.
and they used to grow hundreds of different varieties of corn in Mexico that were extremely nutritionally dense and high quality. But with the free trade agreements with Canada and the U.S., Mexico became flooded with cheap subsidized corn from north of the border, and that basically drove all of the Mexican small farmers out of business.
Yeah.
And then what happens is that huge corporations come in and want to have farms in Mexico. So they buy up all the land, and then all of the people who were formerly farmers and landowners become workers on these farms, earning a wage that they can't even survive on.
Yeah, exactly.
So it really touches all aspects of the economy and the world, the way that the industrial and corporate-driven food system exists nowadays.
So obviously lots of ethical concerns, but something you touched on briefly was that the health concerns are one of the major threats that this food system poses, that concerns to human health. But in your opinion, if you wanted to explain a bit more what you think are the most prevalent issues outside of health, like environment and societal issues that are stemmed from this system.
Yeah, so I would say you're exactly right. The major issues could be categorized as environmental, social, or health issues. The environmental issues are pretty huge and pretty devastating. And industrial agriculture, as you can imagine, with its high level inputs and general disregard for natural ecosystems, is obviously much, much worse than what you can do with ecological methods that take advantage of the natural systems that are already there and work with them.
May even progress them.
Exactly. Because natural ecosystems are very good at producing food and animals, right? Yeah. But we as humans have this typical egocentric thing where we think that we can dominate nature and wipe it all out and start from a fresh berry field and
live outside
somehow
of it,
be more
basically.
Productive.
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest issues in agriculture with the environment is the decoupling of animals from the land. So beef production, for example, well, meat production in general, but especially beef production with cows, is probably the most energy intensive and environmentally damaging industry in agriculture. Yeah. And the reason for this is that we have taken the cows off of the grass, where these grasslands and ruminant livestock have co-evolved together for thousands thousands of years. All of the great grasslands in the world have ruminant livestock on them. And you have this system where the grass grows and feeds the cow, and the cow poops and fertilizes the grass, and it's a system that has perfected itself over thousands of years. So then humans come along, and this really started with the subsidization of corn and wheat, because it made those products so cheap that it made sense to use them as a feed
to
produce
cattle. Livestock, of course.
So what we did was we took all of the cows off of the grass, stuck them in big, massive barns with thousands of cattle in one barn, and then we, on the land, we kill all the grass and other plants, and we plant corn with a whole bunch of chemicals and irrigate it with a whole bunch of water, and then we process that corn and feed it to the cows. And then the cows, when they defecate, that manure is not returned to the land.
It's aggregated in
massive manure lagoons that release enormous amounts of methane gas, which is the most potent greenhouse gas. So it's, I mean, when you frame it like that, it's really ridiculous.
It's really, it makes the issue stand out really prominently, obviously. And also, like, another, I mean, there are obviously dozens of unmentioned issues that are also involved in that cycle, but another obviously large one is soil depletion from monoculture farming, and how you're depleting all the soil and then not returning anything natural to it.
Yeah, exactly. So there's two main issues with that. There's nutrient depletion and then there's soil erosion. So basically what happens is when you're growing the same crop and exclusively that crop, say corn, year after year on a plot of land, it's gradually draining out all of the nutrients that that plant is taking out.
Yeah. Because
and then
obviously,
you're cutting the corn and you're sending it off to the city or whatever, and those nutrients are never returning to the soil.
Yeah.
And then you become dependent on chemical fertilizers, or not necessarily chemical, but you become dependent on external fertilizers that you have to purchase. And those fertilizers tend to be extremely inefficient. So you pour on a whole bunch of nitrogen and phosphorus, and only a very small percentage of it, generally between 10 to 30%, is actually in a form that's able to be absorbed by the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it just runs off into water bodies, basically. And that
that's
is one of the
really
leading causes of water pollution in the world.
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is soil erosion. So you, when you have the same crop year after year, you have long periods of time, like in the winter and so on, or in the off season, in more temperate zones, where there's nothing growing and the land is just bare, and they, because they use herbicides to kill any ground cover that might exist. And that is really terrible for erosion, because leaving the soil bare means that it's exposed to wind and rain and everything that can wash the soil away.
Yeah.
And soil erosion is becoming a huge, huge problem in many of many areas of the world that were previously big agricultural producers, like lots of areas of China, Africa. And soil erosion basically leads to desertification, the creation of deserts, and huge areas where you can no longer grow food. And basically, once that happens, there's no going back.
Yeah.
This soil has developed over hundreds of thousands of years through natural systems. And once we deplete it and it washes all away, we can't just artificially
reconstruct
it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of touching on some of the environmental issues. I guess some of the health issues we could talk about is obviously the exposure to pesticides on industrially produced food. Another thing is just the overall lack of nutrition in those foods.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously processed foods that are made with corn and wheat are not very nutritionally dense. You have high calories but very, very low nutrients.
Yeah.
But even when you compare fruits and vegetables, when you compare industrially produced fruits and vegetables to organically produced fruits and vegetables, the organic ones actually do have significantly higher nutrient densities. And I'm not just saying that, like, there is a lot of data to back that up. And a lot of that is because it's, you know, it's bringing in actual
nutrients
from
the soil. Exactly.
Yeah.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out a warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out a warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. If I had a song, if I had a song, I'd sing it in the morning, I'd sing it in the evening, all over this land. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out a warning, I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land. Well, I got a hammer, and I got a bell, and I got a song to sing all over this land. It's the hammer of justice, it's the bell of freedom, it's the song about love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land.
Hello, welcome back, friends. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9 FM, The Cave's Educational Radio Documentaries. I am your host, Liam, today, discussing some of the issues in Canada's current food and agricultural system. So I was just interviewing a local organic farmer, Ayla Fenton, and we were talking about some of the fundamental flaws and reasons for the unsustainability of the current industrial agriculture system. So really the point of this documentary, because I only have an hour to talk about these huge, huge issues, really the point is to get people to want to educate themselves and to go out and read and learn about how your food is produced and think about it when you're shopping in the stores. Think about what you're buying, how it's being grown, how it's being distributed, and think about if that's a market you really want to be supporting. Or if you want to be pushing for change as well in the food system and pushing towards supporting ecological practices and sustainable practices, really. So in this next clip, I talked to Ayla Fenton a bit more, and we just got into a little bit more of the social justice issues in Canada specifically. So we'll get to that now. Keep it locked at 91.9 The Cave.
So there are a lot of what I would describe as social justice issues with the way that the current food system is structured. Basically, the industrial food system is designed by corporations to benefit corporations, mm-hmm. not to benefit producers or eaters.
Yeah.
In other words, all people.
Yeah, and it's run as a private business, basically.
Exactly, and not only does it is it not designed for our benefit? It really is about profits for corporations at any cost.
Yeah.
They don't care what the costs are to
yeah.
average people. And I think the effect on family farmers has been huge. The number of farms in Canada, I mean, I told you earlier that back in the 30s when some of these policies were enacted, over 70% of Canada's population
yeah.
were farmers. Now that figure is less than 2%.
Yeah.
And the average size of those farms is much, much higher.
And it's a constantly dropping percentage.
Exactly.
Well.
So it's been decreasing over the past 50 years
yeah.
very consistently. And it's been only very, very recently, like in the past 10 years, really, that you've been starting to see a slight uptick
mm-hmm.
in the number of very small scale family farms.
Yeah.
And that's because you see more people like myself, who are interested
yeah.
in getting into
ecological. More people talking about it and discussing
exactly.
issues.
Welcome back, friends. You're still listening to CKVI's 91.9 FM, The Cave's Educational Radio Documentaries. I'm your host today, Liam. I'm discussing some of the issues in the Canadian food system. So just as a general recap, if you're just tuning in, inspiration came for this show. I got a job on an organic farm last year and have had the amazing opportunity to learn tons and tons about issues in our food system, and I would encourage all of you to go out and do the same, read about how your food's produced, all of this. The main thing that I've realized over the course of the past year or so is how pervasively consumers are disengaged from their food sources, and how pervasive it is for consumers to not consider where, by whom, or how their food is produced or prepared. And it's really weird because this is quite an abstract practice in historical terms, in terms of how humans have been producing and distributing food for thousands of years. So yeah, we will hear a few more great protest songs that are related to the issues, and we'll be back to talk to Ayla Fenton a little bit more. Yeah, so this next song is by Guy Carawan, the Montgomery Gospel Trio, and the Nashville Quartet, and it's called This Little Light of Mine. Keep it locked at 91.9 The Cave.
I'm gonna let it shine. Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
My daddy was a miner and I'm a miner's son, and I'll stick with the Union till every battle's won.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man?
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Don't scab for the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Us poor folks haven't got a chance unless we organize.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Welcome back, friends. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9, The Cave's Educational Radio Documentaries. I'm your host, Liam, today, discussing some of the issues in Canada's food system. And I do wish I had all day to do this show so that I could tell you everything that's in my head about these issues, but really, the main point of this show is to get you to educate yourself. Go out, read on the internet, check out Facebook pages. There are a lot of great social media sites born out of activism in this field. Overgrow the System is a great example on Facebook and Twitter. Check out the National Farmers Union as well. They have a lot of good resources on their websites. So in this next clip, I'm interviewing a local organic farmer, Ella Fenton, and I ask her to explain a bit about food security and what it really is, and also we talked a little bit about the inherent unsustainability of the system. So stick around at 91.9 The Cave.
So I am here interviewing a local organic farmer, Ella Fenton. We were just discussing a few of the societal issues presented, or social justice issues, if you will, presented by the current industrial model of agriculture. So food security is a term that is often heard, but a lot of people may not really understand what it means. So could you give a brief explanation to help us understand a bit more what food security actually means?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny because when I first started taking these food security courses at Ryerson, a lot of people were like, they basically, when I told them about it, thought that food security was the same thing as food safety. So they thought I was learning about, you know, inspecting food.
Yeah. Like that.
But it's not the same thing at all. Food safety is obviously very important as well. But food security is more referring to whether people have enough to eat and that's appropriate food. So food security exists when all people at all times have physical and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutritious food and clean water in order to meet their dietary needs to live a happy and fulfilled life or whatever. Those of us in the field, the academic field, really believe, and I'm sure most of you would agree, that it is the right of every person to have continuous access to the resources necessary to produce, earn, or purchase that food. Not only just to prevent hunger, but to ensure health and well-being.
Yeah, exactly.
So the quality of the food matters.
Yeah, exactly.
So the way that academics define food security is with something we call the 5 A's. So that's availability, accessibility, acceptability, appropriateness, and agency. So I'll go over each of those really quickly. Availability, quite simply, is a sufficient supply of food to be able to feed all people.
For the demand.
many people, you always hear this quoted about, oh, we need to increase food production if we're going to feed the increasing population of the world. And that is simply not true.
Exactly.
Currently, we produce way more than enough food to feed every single person that is on this planet right now.
Yeah.
But we waste about 30 to 50% of it.
Yes. That is a very important figure.
Yeah. And North America is especially bad for that.
Yeah.
So availability is not necessarily an issue of production.
Yeah.
We don't need to produce more to feed more people.
Yeah.
We just need to find ways of getting that food to people.
To people.
So the next thing, which goes along with this then, is accessibility. So whether people are able to access the food that exists. That means that we need to have effective distribution systems in order to ensure that people everywhere have physical access to the food that they need. So that's kind of the physical accessibility, but the other thing is economic accessibility, whether people can afford to purchase the food that is necessary for themselves to be healthy. And so in a lot of situations, you have large groups of people who the food that is accessible to them is very poor nutritional quality.
Yeah.
They have access, or they can afford to purchase cheap processed foods, basically, that create a huge variety of health problems for them. And, you know, then we see the emergence of all these diet-related diseases like diabetes and heart disease and so on. So the next A of food security is acceptability. We think that food is acceptable when it is both nutritionally adequate and culturally acceptable. The abundance of affordable processed foods, such as those high in calories but low in nutrients, while they are accessible and available, may not be acceptable from a nutritional or cultural standpoint. The next A is appropriateness. This basically means that the food is produced in an appropriate way that protects ecological systems. And the last A is agency, and that basically means that people need to have the agency, which means basically the ability to influence their own food systems. They need to have the political power to be able to make changes to their food system as they see fit and to access food that they think is appropriate.
Also access information about the food that they're eating.
Absolutely,
and be able to have a voice, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have obviously had very little exposure, especially compared to people like you and people involved in the FU, to flaws in the system. So, I guess giving a kind of concise explanation of why the current system is inherently unsustainable.
Yeah, okay, so I'll talk a little bit about the unsustainability from kind of an environmental and more practical perspective, and then I'll talk a bit about why it's unsustainable from a societal and food security perspective. So, from an environmental perspective, there is a big misconception out there that most people hold, which is that industrial agriculture is more efficient than organic agriculture and that it produces higher yields.
Yeah.
And therefore must lead to increased food security because we're growing more
food.
That is simply not true. If you look at the actual data that exists, there's no conclusive evidence to support that view. And a really quick review of the literature will show you that industrial agriculture is actually significantly less efficient than traditional polyculture food production.
In terms of the input-output ratio, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So compared to 40 years ago, the prevalent form of agriculture today uses 2 to 3 times more fertilizer and twice as many pesticides. Basically what happens is as you degrade the soils, you need to use more and more fertilizers and more pesticides because your systems are failing, and so you're trying to continually remedy them by just throwing more chemicals at it, which is ridiculous, obviously.
It's definitely part of the aspect that is not necessarily, like, very exposed to the public, I mean, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's the whole genetically modified organisms thing.
Yeah.
It's also there are so many misconceptions about GM foods, and I don't think we have time to get into that.
Yes, of course.
We could do an entire show on that.
Yeah.
But I'll just say that the general idea is that these agriculture corporations have continually promoted the idea that the use of genetically modified seeds will result in higher yields and more efficient crop production. But in fact, these so-called miracle seeds are really just engineered to be more responsive to industrial inputs,
yeah,
such as petrochemical fertilizers or pesticides.
Yeah.
So the most dominant genetically modified crop on the market is what's called Roundup Ready corn or Roundup Ready soybeans,
yeah,
which is a Monsanto product. And basically, these crops have been engineered to be able to withstand the herbicide glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in their Roundup,
yeah,
pesticide. So what they do is they spray the whole field with Roundup, kill everything.
It is terrifying. If you live in southern Ontario, you've probably seen cornfields at the beginning of a season, or when it's just completely blackened,
it looks like it's burnt
or like,
yeah,
post-apocalyptic.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, exactly.
So they spray this stuff, and then they plant the genetically modified seeds, and the seeds are able to withstand the herbicide, and they're the only thing that can. So they grow.
Also, just as you were saying, the fact that these herbicides and the excessive use of pesticides is something that's exponentially getting greater because the systems are failing. GMO seeds are obviously something that were a response to crops not growing well in depleted soil and in soil with high levels of chemicals,
yeah,
and
yeah,
all of that.
So the idea then here is that if those inputs, like the Roundup, are not provided, those seeds actually have significantly lower yields than locally adapted, regular
varieties.
And then the idea of locally adapted varieties is really important too, because with the GM seeds, they show in lab tests in the Midwestern United States that they have higher yields. But then they try to sell them to farmers everywhere, all over the world, like in India or Mexico or wherever.
Yeah.
And in those places, the genetically modified seeds actually have much lower
mm-hmm.
yields than the varieties that farmers have been breeding and adapting to local conditions over thousands of years.
Of course, yeah.
So as a kind of summary of that, the yield gains that have been achieved through the adoption of industrial methods really just correlate with the increases in inputs. And this means that they're inherently unsustainable because the majority of those inputs come from non-renewable sources. They're mostly based, petroleum-based inputs. And there are obviously huge environmental costs associated with their use
mm-hmm.
that is not taken into account when you're talking about yields and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Another interesting stat is that modern industrial agriculture uses, on average, 10 calories of energy to produce a single calorie of food. And the reason that this is possible is because at every step in the chain, the energy part of it is subsidized. We have
mm-hmm.
subsidized oil that's artificially cheap.
Yeah, of course.
That leads to the production of all of these inputs, which are also subsidized. So
it's
all
really interesting figure.
Yeah, and like
did
as soon
not
as
know
we
that.
Hit
yeah.
peak oil, it's all gonna collapse.
Hello, welcome back, friends. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9 The Cave. It is our educational radio documentary hour, and I am your host, Liam, talking about some of the issues in the Canadian food system. So really the point of this, as I've mentioned 100 times in the past hour, it's really to get consumers to go out and want to educate themselves, because what I've realized over the past year is how pervasively consumers are disengaged from the producers of their food and all of their products, and that most consumers don't actually realize that purchasing products is a political act. When you buy a product, it is voting to uphold the practices that are being used to produce that product. So right now, I was discussing with a local organic farmer some of the reasons behind the inherent unsustainability of the current industrial agriculture system. So in this next clip, we moved on a little bit to talk about the unsustainability from a food security perspective, rather than just the environmental aspects we were talking about before. So stick around, we'll have about 10 minutes left in this show. And yeah, it should be fun. Keep it locked, 91.9 The Cave.
Yeah, sure. So as I've kind of already indicated, the corporations are really pushing this idea that industrial agriculture is required to produce more food so that we can feed more people and have better quality of life and so on. And that adopting more industrial agriculture will improve food security. And this, again, is simply not true. As I explained earlier, the assertions of increased yields are dubious at best.
Yeah.
But then there's the whole point of that even if industrial agriculture did produce higher yields, an expansion of the food supply does not necessarily correlate with increased food security.
Yeah.
If people can't access that food or if that food is not nutritionally appropriate.
Yeah.
So the United States is a great example because it's supposedly the country that has benefited the most from the development of the agro-industrial complex. Yet, despite being the world's largest producer of food and the largest exporter of food, there are approximately 23 million food insecure people in the country. That's almost 10% of the population. Yeah. Who don't have enough to eat or are malnutritioned because they can't access nutritionally appropriate foods. This is partly due to high economic inequality in the States. And again, though industrial agriculture may produce cheaper calories that these people can afford to buy, it does not promote better nutrition. I really liked a quote by Michael Pollan, who's a really well-known writer on these issues. In his book In Defense of Food, he says that the result is a nutritional equivalent of inflation, such that we have to eat more and more to get the same amount of various essential nutrients.
Yeah.
And that leads to issues like obesity and all sorts of health issues, right?
It's obviously, it's definitely one of the most discussed issues, I think, out there of the food security, I mean, the food system issues, is that we have to eat more non-nutritious food with more calories than organic food that has less calories and more nutrition.
Exactly.
It's just the general
thing.
And
it makes us fat and unhealthy.
Exactly.
You've been seeing a massive rise in all of these diseases that didn't even exist or barely existed 50 years ago.
Definitely,
like,
comparatively.
Like diabetes and heart disease and high blood pressure. Those are all diet-related preventable diseases.
And there's no way to dispute that it's co-evolving with the way the food system has been changing.
Exactly.
And something that needs to be mentioned more obviously.
So even if industrial food were nutritional, food security can't be achieved by simply producing more food.
Yeah.
More important than that is who has access to the knowledge and technology to produce food, who controls the distribution of food, and who has the purchasing power to acquire that food. As I said before, the invasion of industrial agriculture has decimated the livelihoods of farmers throughout the world who were previously able to sustain themselves by producing food for themselves to eat and for earning an income. In many industrialized economies, like the global north, you know, like Canada, North America, Europe, former small farmers were able to transition to other sources of income, like working in manufacturing or in the knowledge economy, with relative ease. But in developing countries,
it's
that's
a
not
lot
the
harder.
Case.
Yeah, of course.
And small farmers have either had to take on crippling debt in order to compete, or they've just been forced off of their land and into poverty and servitude as landless workers on the corporate farms.
Exactly. Like as you said about the best one of the example you gave of the hundreds of varieties of corn that used to be grown in Mexico and now it's basically North American corporations growing corn in Mexico, hiring hundreds and thousands of laborers at a very low wage. So
exactly.
Obviously.
Yeah. And there are some other really good examples from South America as well. In Bolivia, agricultural exports have been growing exponentially for half a decade, with constant promises that if you export more, your country will develop faster and your population will get richer, and blah, 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 blah. But 95% of the rural population still lives on less than $1 per day. So where are those export profits going to?
Hello, friends. You're listening to CKVI's 91.9, the Caves Educational Documentary Hour. I'm your host, Liam, talking about issues in the Canadian food system. So up next, we're just going to hear Pastures of Plenty, a wonderful protest song by Woody Guthrie. And then the last clip of my interview with Ayla, where I ask her a bit about why is it important to support local growers and how can we do it? So yeah, here is Pastures of Plenty by Woody Guthrie. Keep it locked to 91.9 The Cave.
Mighty hard road that my poor hand has hold. My poor feet has traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your desert was hot and your mountains was cold. In your orchards of peaches and prunes, in the windy wind. California and Arizona, I make all your crops, and it's north up to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine, to set on your table your light sparkling wine. Pastures of plenty from dry desert ground, from that Grand Coulee Dam where the water runs down. Ever stayed in this union, us migrants have been. We'll work in this fight and we'll fight till we win.
Well, it's all... Yeah, so really it's voting with your dollars. I think that this is something that most consumers don't consider, but every dollar that you spend, not just on food, but on anything, every dollar that you spend is supporting, financially supporting, the practices that go into producing whatever it is that you're buying.
Yeah.
So if you're buying clothes from, I don't know, H&M or whatever, some place that has sweatshops in Bangladesh, you are directly supporting those practices and telling the corporations that you are okay with that.
Exactly.
And you want that.
Just because there are millions or thousands or millions of people doing the same thing does not mean that you're not supporting it. I think that's a common kind of justification for being like, I don't support it, so it doesn't really matter that I do it.
Yeah, and I really don't think... I think that the vast majority of people have absolutely no intention of harming people, other people, or causing harm to the environment. But the way that the capitalist system is structured...
You're just so disengaged from all of your producers.
Yeah, money serves as a tool to disengage you from the production system, which means that you have very little knowledge of how things are produced.
Yeah.
And if you have little knowledge, then you have... little ability to change anything.
Exactly.
So really all I can say is try to educate yourself about your consumption choices as much as you can, and then based on what you learn, make purchasing choices accordingly.
According to what your beliefs and values also allow for you to.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there will always be some people who will hear all of this and listen to this documentary and think, you know what, I don't care. I want the cheap oranges from California.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that's the case, then I guess that's cool. But at least educate yourself so that you know what it is that your dollars are supporting.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, this has been an...
Hello, friends. Welcome back to CKVI's 91.9 FM, The Caves Educational Documentary Hour. I have been your host, Liam, talking about issues in the Canadian food system. So just to sum everything up, the inspiration behind this was definitely realizing how disengaged consumers are from the producers of all of their products, but mainly disengaged from their food sources. And the fact that people don't care to consider where, by whom, or how their food is produced. And this industrial agricultural system has only evolved within the past 50 years, and it's already showing such evident signs of unsustainability. So it's definitely remembering that whenever you buy a product, you are voting to support the system that is producing that product. So if you personally agree with the way your food is being produced in this industrial system, if you agree with all of the environmental, societal, and human health issues that it poses, then support it, but just educate yourself. There are some really good resources. Check out Facebook pages and Twitter, things like, and your local farmers market. Check out the Memorial Center Farmers Market on Facebook, the National Farmers Union. They have a lot of good sources, and Overgrow the System. Thanks so much for listening, guys. This has been your educational radio hour on CKVI's 91.9 The Cave.